When I was a child, the world was divided into two different kinds of people. Not Jews and non-Jews, not Republicans and Democrats, not Americans and foreigners. Still, there were two different kinds of people. Not even Ring Lardner's kind, the American humorist who said, there are two different kinds of people, people who insist on dividing people into two kinds and those who don't. But in my world, the two kinds of people that existed, and some of you will remember this, were people who read Marvel comics and people who read DC comics. And they looked down on each other, as two groups ought to do. And I, as a member of the group which I inherited from my older brothers who read Marvel comics, thought how unsophisticated, how depraved were the readers of DC comics who read about Superman and Batman when I and my friends, and especially my brothers, were reading about Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and Silver Surfer and Thor. And so it went, as we bought 12-cent comic books before, of course, as inevitably happens to every child who reads comics, one day you come home and your mother has thrown them out. After I recovered from that trauma, which took decades, I realized that, in fact, I may have been too hasty. And so as I explained last night to the Friday Night Live crowd, I used the privilege, which is the best privilege of being a rabbi. You might think what's great about being a rabbi is that you get to be there at significant moments in people's lives, or you get to teach, or you get to express yourself in front of groups, but that's not really it. The best part about being a rabbi is that you are never wasting time. And that's why I went to see Batman. You may think that you're wasting time, or others may expect, look, the rabbi's going to see a movie, but in fact, you're doing research. This is a pop culture phenomenon. If I haven't seen Batman, how can I give a sermon about Batman as I did last night, and a different sermon about Batman as I will this morning, which, as I explained last night, makes my ticket deductible? There are advantages to the clergy you have no idea. But what I really wanted to talk about this morning in terms of Batman is that in the course of watching the movie, I was struck by certain parallels between the hero as he's portrayed in the movie and the central hero of the Torah. Now, I grant you, most people probably didn't leave the movie and say, you know, he's just like Moses, that guy in a cape who flies through Gotham City. But in fact, there are some things that not only are parallel to Moses, but say something important about the nature of leadership today. And the first and most important thing is that unlike almost every superhero in comic books and mythology, Batman has no special powers. Batman is a human being. He has remarkable technology and an omnicompetent butler, such a good butler we haven't seen since the novels of P.G. Wodehouse and Jeeves, but this butler can do everything. But nonetheless, he doesn't have any special powers. And the idea that a hero is a human being is an idea that we ought not take for granted. Greek heroes were superhuman. Achilles has the strength of many, many men and only one weakness. The heroes, as we know, of religious traditions often seem superhuman. Samson is basically superhuman. Jesus is a god. Moses is a man. Not only is Moses a man, but he's a flawed man, an imperfect man, A man who makes mistakes, and not just one mistake, but many mistakes. Granted, Moses has a peculiarly, particularly, singularly intimate relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with God. But that is what makes him Moses. And the miracles that Moses works are not Moses' miracles, they're God's miracles. And strange as it sounds, as much as we talk about it, the truth is that we don't like it when our leaders turn out to be human beings. Oh, we like it when they turn out to be human beings with endearing quirks. But with flaws, that we don't like. And yet the first model in the Torah is the model of a person who is human. And second, not only is the person human, but Batman and Moses, a phrase I know that will probably never be coupled when the sermon is done, but for now, just give me the Batman and Moses, are both ambivalent about being heroes. Because they understand the burden that being a hero imposes on the hero. And anyone who is too eager for leadership is a fool. And what makes Moses and Batman so remarkable is that their leadership is predicated on the belief, which is always expressed by leaders but is rarely true, that they have to assume leadership not because they want the position but because they're really the only person to do it. Batman doesn't want to be Batman anymore. Who would want to be Batman? I mean, really, after the first rush is gone, it's a miserable life to always have to jump into a cape and fly through the city and get shot at. Right? The car is cool, but... But Moses, if you recall, when God comes to Moses at the burning bush, Moses repeatedly tries to get out of leadership. Finally, looking up at the heavens and saying, Shlach na biyad tishlach, which can roughly be translated as send anyone you want, just not me. And Moses is right. His life is made miserable by the assumption of leadership. He wanders 40 years through the desert and he's got to lead. But of course, ultimately, there are tremendous satisfactions to being the leader. And that, too, is part of the complex calculus of whether somebody decides to be a superhero or a Torah hero. The hardest part for Batman, for Moses, is what happens at the end of the movie. And I'm not giving anything away here, although you've probably all seen it anyway, haven't you? And your ticket's not deductible, by the way. I just want you to know. My stuff. Is that Batman has to assume certain tasks that even though he knows they're good and he knows they're important and he knows he must do them, they will make him hated. And Moses does that. Moses does things that he knows are important, and he knows he must do, and he knows the people will resent him for it, even hate him for it. Among them, bringing them out of Egypt in the first place. We saw it in the Torah portion this morning. He said, "You said to me, why did you bring us out of Egypt, that good land, into this miserable desert and into the promised land, which we're sure is also going to be miserable?" And if you look at the great leaders of history, they invariably braved the dislike, even the hatred of their people, to do what they believed was right. Lincoln is a perfect example. Lincoln was reviled in his time. And that too we have to remember, in this season, when we seek leaders, that part of what we're looking for in a leader in America, in Israel, are leaders who are human, are leaders who are flawed. Not because we choose them over unflawed leaders, but because all leaders are human beings. And the Torah could not be clearer about anything than it is about that, which is to be a person means to be cracked and riven and broken in shards, but still function. And there is no such thing as shleimut, as wholeness, when you talk about a human soul. And also, one thing you discover at the end of Batman and at the end of the Torah is that when the hero departs from the scene, whether until the sequel or at the end of the book, the world is still a mess. It's still a mess. If you're looking for a hero who will make the world all right again, who will make everything good, who will give you the promised paradise of milk and honey that we are told one day will be in the Torah, then you are sadly deluded. We have had great heroes in history, political and otherwise. And if Pericles and Charlemagne and Churchill couldn't give us a perfect world, neither will whoever is selected at all the various elections in the various lands in which people repose their hopes. In other words, a real hero is a human being who, through difficult choices, sometimes reluctant choices, will make the world a little better. A little better. And understand that that doesn't mean that heroes don't overpromise. Moses does it. Moses says, I'm going to bring you into a land of milk and honey, and then they get into the land and there's no milk and no honey. They have to fight inch by inch and settle and gather. And in the book of Joshua, when Israel finally goes into the land, we see that Moses has in fact rhetorically overshot the mark a little bit. He's promised the Israelite equivalent of a chicken in every pot. But it turns out not to be true. And that's why I think, apart from whatever technical skill, that's why I think the movie hits such a chord. Because somewhere inside of us, we really do know that a hero is not a perfect person. That a hero doesn't always conform in actions to what a hero says in words. That there are certain markers that let us know that this is a special person. Washington refusing to be the king of America, insisting on being the president, and like Cincinnatus going back to his farm when his leadership is over. We see that and we say, he's not a perfect person, but that's the mark of a hero. That's what we're looking for. That's how we ought to be looking. The Kotzke Rebbe said, when God says you should be holy, he means you should be humanly holy. God, he said, has enough angels. What he needs are good human beings. One of the things that we see from our tradition and from the holiday that begins this evening is that there will never be a time of perfect human felicity when everything will be good and there will be no pain. And there's a reason for that. It's because, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who died this past week and was memorialized all over the world, again, a flawed but remarkable man, as he taught in his writings, he said, you know, people think there's a division between good and evil that's easily identifiable in the world, but the truth is that the line between good and evil runs not between societies and not between individuals. The line runs inside every human heart. There is good and evil inside of all of us, leaders, followers, those who jump in the fray, those who keep themselves aloof, every one of us. And that means that evil will never disappear, that the struggle is continuous, that perfection is unattainable, that when we finish the book of Devarim, of Deuteronomy, the Israelites are still in the wilderness because there is no perfect promised land. It is our responsibility to recognize that we can make progress in this world. But it's a progress of steps, step by step, incremental progress across the wilderness together. That when we choose leaders, we're choosing not saints, but human beings. And that we have to listen to them, correct them, follow them, lead them, be a part of the process. After all, the Israelites were hardly passive in the face of Moses' leadership. Again and again, they questioned, and sometimes they were right. A superintended world, a world in which God watches over us, is not an ideal world. It's a world, as I said before, in which we are blessed bakol, with everything, with struggle and with joy, with pain and with promise. In the months ahead, both here and in Israel, we will be faced with the choice of leadership. Whoever we choose, we know this from the Torah, whoever we choose will disappoint us. But they may also surprise us. They will violate some of their principles, but they may also fulfill others. In other words, they will be human. What we can hope for is that they will be the best that we have to offer, and that we, as custodians of the future of our own children, families, and nations, we'll watch them, pray for them, help them, and remember that the responsibility for leadership lies not with one, but with all. And it isn't Moses alone who crossed the wilderness. It was the entire people of Israel. Shabbat Shalom.